It's been called the scariest film on Netflix by critics and by viewers alike. It's a Spanish film that's written and directed by Paco Plaza, who found fame a few years before this one came out with the Wreck found footage franchise. Released in 2017, Veronica takes place in 1991 and follows the story of a teenage girl who, along with two friends, decides to conduct a séance with a talking board to summon her dead father in their school basement during a solar eclipse. But despite Veronica's best intentions and her love for her father, things go badly awry when an evil spirit is conjured up instead, and she becomes possessed by an otherworldly evil. The film opens with us knowing none of these things, though. We hear a telephone call that's been placed to emergency services in Madrid, and then follow along with officers as they enter a ransacked apartment, only to see them freeze with shock when they see something they are unable to comprehend. Well, after the camera cuts away, we're told the film we're about to watch is a true story, based on the police records of the real-life case. As we can probably all agree, seeing based on a true story pop up on the screen at the beginning of a horror film fills us with anticipation. Even if the filmmakers take some creative liberties to make things a little scarier, there's just something chilling about knowing that what we're about to see is based on real events, which is why we have this season of the podcast. But even though we've often bragged that the true stories we've talked about this season are scarier than the films they're based on, the reality of that statement is really up to you. This time, though, the actual story behind Veronica manages to stand out. It's a very real story of an actual case of paranormal activity that had terrifying, even deadly consequences. I'd say the same thing about this story that I would say about the film. It's not for the faint of heart. Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of America. And welcome to the latest episode of Season 9, a season we call Based on a True Story, or Basada en una Historia Real. And, you know, that's just for this episode. American Hauntings is written and performed by Troy Taylor, that's me, and is produced and co-hosted by Cody Beck. And this season, we're bringing you some of the scariest and most unsettling films about ghosts, demons, murder, and mayhem that have ever been shown on the silver screen. But you can't watch any of them and say, it's only a movie. Every episode of this season offers the true story behind these horrifying films. Stories that are usually much scarier than anything a movie studio can create. This is episode 18 of season 9, Veronica. The film begins 5 days before the arrival of the police to the apartment where Veronica lives with her family, in a working-class neighborhood in Madrid. After her father's death, her mother works long hours to support the family, leaving 15-year-old Veronica the main caregiver to her younger siblings, twins Lucia and Irene and Antonito. On the day of the solar eclipse, Veronica and her friends, Rosa and Diana, conduct a séance with a talking board. Veronica wants to contact her late father, and Diana says that she wants to reach a boyfriend who died in a motorcycle accident. Using a glass as the pointer for messages that come through the board, Rosa and Diana pull their hands away when the glass suddenly becomes hot. Then, as the eclipse occurs, the glass shatters, cutting Veronica's finger and dripping blood onto the board. Veronica suffers a seizure, becomes unresponsive on the floor, whispers something repeatedly, and then lets out a demonic scream that horrifically distorts her face. She wakes up later in the school nurse's office, who tells her that she must have fainted from an iron deficiency. Knowing something bizarre happened to her in that basement, though, Veronica begins experiencing paranormal occurrences, both at school and at home, and her friends start to avoid her. She goes back to the school basement and finds the school's elderly blind nun, nicknamed Hermana Muerte, or Sister Death, by the students. The nun tells her that the seance has attached a dark spirit to her, and if she can't make it leave, it can kill her. Now worried that the spirit might be harmful to her sibling, she tries to help them by creating protective symbols, which are mysteriously destroyed. She tries to intervene when she dreams the spirit is choking Lucia, only to discover she was choking the girl herself while asleep. Veronica wakes up to find that she's had her first period, and as she tries to wash the blood off the mattress, she finds burn marks on the underside of it. She also finds burn marks on the mattresses of her sisters and brother, but those marks are in the shape of a human body. After discovering in an occult magazine that she can force the spirits to leave by saying goodbye to them at the end of the seance, which wasn't done before, she tries to get her friends to hold another seance, but they refuse. It's then that Rosa reveals why she's been avoiding Veronica. The words that Veronica whispered when she was unconscious was that she was going to die in 3 days. Desperate, Veronica decides to hold the seance with her siblings, and when she tries to make the spirit leave, it refuses. So she calls the police to beg for help. And at that point, she makes a terrifying discovery about herself and her family, nearly as terrifying as what the police detectives find when they enter the apartment. Now, I'm not going to spoil anything here. I'll just encourage you to watch the film when you get a chance. You won't be sorry you did, unless you're sorry afterward that you don't sleep well that night. Veronica is a frightening film. As I said, it's been called the scariest film on Netflix, and I definitely put it pretty high on that list. It's also been said that the true story it inspired is even scarier than the film itself. Again, let you be the judge of that for yourself. But once more, I'll admit that those who say that, well, they just may be right. The inspiration for the film's main character, Veronica, was a teenage girl named Estefania Gutierrez Lizarro, who lived in the working-class neighborhood of Vallecas on the south side of Madrid, Spain. In 1990, Estefania was 15 years old and, like many people her age, developed an interest in the paranormal and the occult. At the time, her parents weren't concerned about her new hobby. They just figured it was a phase she was going through and a harmless way for her to rebel. Of course, if they had any idea about the events that were going to follow, they would have put a stop to this new phase before it could even get started. Using some allowance money, Estefania bought a Ouija board, thinking it would be fun to try and reach out to the spirit world. She stuck it in her backpack and took it everywhere, to parties and to school, getting her friends excited about holding a seance. According to Estefania's parents, one of her friends had recently lost her boyfriend in a tragic motorcycle accident. She wanted to try and contact his ghost, so she was the first to volunteer for a seance. So Estefania and a few of her friends found an isolated storage area in the school building, placed the Ouija board on the table, placed their fingers lightly on the pointer, and began trying to reach the girl's dead boyfriend. But almost as soon as they started, the door to the storage room slammed open and one of the nuns who served as teachers at the school burst in and put a stop to the seance. She was angry the girls would dare use a Ouija board at a religious school and grabbed the board and snapped it in half. But this punishment may have led to consequences more severe than the sister had in mind. According to the other girls who were present that day, when the nun broke the Ouija board, it gave off some kind of strange white fog, which Estefania appeared to breathe in. It was later theorized this fog was, in fact, an evil spirit or a demon that entered Estefania's body and began to possess her. And if this was true, it might explain the horrifying ordeal that soon began for Estefania, her family, and her loved ones. Soon after the incident with the seance, Estefania became very sick. She began suffering from extreme seizures, during which her body shook and trembled, and she would often bark angrily, scream, and scratch at the walls. She also experienced what were believed to be incredibly vivid hallucinations, telling her parents that she saw dark figures lurking in their home at night. She claimed they were evil beings who tormented her during the day, but especially at night when Estefania refused to sleep because she was convinced they would kill her. As the days and nights passed, she became more unhinged, and still unable to sleep, she began attacking her siblings, biting, scratching, and striking them. Her family did the best they could, taking her to the hospital to be examined by doctors and a psychologist in case her behavior was caused by mental illness. But despite numerous evaluations and tests, they could find nothing physically or mentally wrong with her. She wasn't suffering from any known disease or condition. The doctors knew she was seriously ill, but they couldn't figure out why. Days and weeks passed, and Estefania's condition worsened. Her parents returned to the doctors and specialists, but there was nothing they could do. They took their daughter to their parish priest, but his prayers didn't help either. Finally, 6 months after the seance with the Ouija board, Estefania was admitted again to the hospital, where she died under mysterious circumstances. Some of the doctors believed she'd suffered a cardiac arrest, while others believed she had epilepsy. In the end, the autopsy was unable to determine a clear cause of death. Needless to say, Estefania's death shocked and stunned her family. And while they had no idea what had caused it, they felt certain that some type of supernatural force was behind it. Even worse, her death did not bring an end to the hauntings in the Lazzaro home. Only Estefania had experienced the strange events before her death, but now the entire family was seeing and hearing the things that had driven their daughter to her grave. At night, they heard what sounded like Estefania screaming in terror in her room. But when family members opened the door, they found nothing, and the shrieking would suddenly halt. When they entered the room, they found all their daughter's things had been thrown around the room. Books and clothing were on the floor, posters were ripped from the walls, and furniture was overturned. Doors and windows slammed shut throughout the house, furniture was moved, chairs were overturned, lights turned on and off, and unexplained scratches started to appear on the walls. Dolls that belonged to Estefania's sisters flew off shelves by themselves, while dresser drawers in their bedroom opened and shut on their own. Most of these things happened in the dead of night, during the hours when Estefania had been afraid to sleep because of the strange, shadowy figures that she claimed to see. Her family hadn't believed in the sightings, dismissing them as a symptom of her illness. But now they were seeing the figures too. They saw them skulking about the house in the night, and they hissed at the family with eerie whispers. One night, Mrs. Lazzaro was attacked by one of the shadow figures. It grabbed her with invisible hands and pushed away her husband when he tried to stop the assault. Mrs. Lazzaro was so terrified by this that she reported the attack to the police. In the report the police took about the incident, she said, quote, "I felt pressure on top of me, but there was no one around. I said to my husband, 'There's someone here.' Then I felt a pair of hands grab my feet and then grab my hand, which was uncovered by the blanket." The unexplained incidents continued at the Lazzaro home for more than a year after their daughter's death. One of the most disturbing events occurred when a photograph of Estefania was knocked onto the floor by unseen hands. When they picked it up to replace it on the shelf, they found the frame was undamaged, but the photo itself had somehow burned to ash behind the glass. This is when the Lazzaros had reached their breaking point and decided they needed help. Estefania's father reached out to the Spanish National Police, and when he was connected with the operator, he made a simple but true statement. Quote, "Good evening, police. Look, I am Maximo Lazzaro, and it's been a few hours in my house. We are experiencing paranormal events. A strange power is moving things and causing a great mess." Well, they soon heard from the chief inspector of the Spanish National Police, Jose Pedro Negre, who, along with three of his officers, came to the Lazaro house to investigate the reports the family had made. It would be famously dubbed the Vallecas case, and what the law enforcement officers witnessed and reported validated the strange and terrifying events that up until that time had only been experienced by the Lazaro family. When the officers arrived at the home, they found the place in shambles. As one of them said, it looked as though vandals had run amok inside. Most of the destruction was in Estefania's old bedroom. Her parents had kept it just as it was when she passed away, with all her furniture, clothing, and belongings in place, but now it looked as though a hurricane had swept through the room, leaving a disaster in its wake. Even the walls of the room had been damaged, scratched as if they'd been mauled by an animal. They also found that Estefania's bedroom was the most haunted part of the house. The family reported that an invisible force roughly shoved anyone who entered the dead girl's room, a story the officers quickly found to be true. The police also claimed to witness a crucifix that was hanging on the wall of the room move by itself. They watched in horror as it was bent and then broken by some unseen power. Left behind on the wall where the cross had hung was a large reddish-brown stain that had the color and stickiness of fresh blood. The officer said that stain seemed to follow them throughout the apartment. It kept showing up in different places, spreading to the furniture and leaving puddles on the floor. At one point, they heard a loud banging noise coming from the porch, which they discovered was completely empty. Doors to an armoire that had been closed and latched suddenly burst open, slamming into one of the startled policemen. All the bizarre occurrences were carefully recorded by the officers and dutifully added to their reports, making the haunting one of the most verified in history. When the media learned the story, it became an immediate and infamous sensation, becoming the best known and best documented haunting to ever occur in Spain. But even in the face of all the media attention, Jose Negre and the other officers never backtracked about what they'd seen and experienced. They were absolutely convinced they had encountered something unexplainable in the Lazaro's home. But the attention and the ongoing paranormal events was too much for Estefania's family. They moved out of the house to escape from the haunting, and despite what it usually seems happens in horror films, this actually worked. The family experienced no further supernatural happenings at their new home, and there were no reports of a continued haunting at their former place. Whatever had been terrorizing them finally stopped. But while the spirits that plagued the Lazaro family were eventually laid to rest, the story of Estefania and the Vallecas case continued to live on. Thanks to the eerie nature of the case and the news coverage it received, it became one of the most popular legends in Madrid, if not all of Spain. And of course, it became the inspiration for Paco Plaza's film, Veronica. Released in 2017, Plaza admitted during an appearance for the film's release that he took some creative license and made his own embellishments to the story to adapt it to the screen. But he added, quote, "In Spain, it's a very popular story because it is, as we say in the film, the only time a police officer has said he witnessed something paranormal, and it's written in a report with an official police stamp. That's really impressive when you look at it." While the writer and director gleaned his story from police reports in the newspaper, there are, of course, differences between the facts of the case and the storytelling of a talented filmmaker. Even so, there's no question that the mysterious death of Estefania Lazaro was a tragic loss that led to her grieving family being plagued by something otherworldly, followed by a police investigation, a media sensation, an enduring legend, and finally, a gripping horror film. And while there may be some differences between what was reported in real life and what was included in the film that inspired it, it's hard not to wonder if everything recounted by the family and the police was true. Was what happened to Estefania, her family, and those police officers truly of supernatural origin? Or did the tragedy of a young girl's death lead to hysteria that infected everyone involved? We may never know for sure. but it certainly caused a serious drop in Ouija board sales in the 1990s and led to many people wondering if summoning spirits and dabbling in the occult was really worth it in the end. Thanks again for listening to American Hauntings, and we hope you'll stay tuned for the postmortem section of the episode. It's coming up right after these messages from our sponsors.
Se creía que lo que ocurría en el cielo era un reflejo de lo que ocurría en la tierra. Por eso se creía también que durante los eclipses la oscuridad reinaba por encima de la luz.
Cerrar los ojos. ¿Hay alguien aquí con nosotras? ¿Quieres hablar con alguna de nosotras? ¿Lo has movido tú?
¿Quién?
No lo sé.
Tú también notaste algo. Aquello de lo que no te despides se queda contigo.
Aquello de lo que no te despides se queda contigo. No mováis.
Pero si estoy yo sola.
No. No estás sola.
Ready for a little. All right, let's try that some more. Ready for a little more American Hauntings this week? Well, we are back with the postmortem, the part of the show after the show where we sharpen our knives and dissect the episode. My name's Troy Taylor. I'm the guy who narrates and writes the show. And across from me is the guy who brought over a brand new Ouija board for us to try out when we're finished recording. My friend, producer, sidekick, and co-host, Cody Beck.
It's weird. All my fingertips are burned off.
Yeah. Well, it was the solar eclipse that we've been waiting for, you know?
Yes.
So we thought we'd give that a shot.
Yes. And I can you really look through negatives of film as like a way to.
Well, apparently, but that was the 90s. So I was looking at some of the janky things that those kids were using. And one kid pulled out 3D glasses and the nun knocked him off his head, I think. So, I don't think I would try that personally. But I don't know. Maybe in the early 90s in Spain, it was OK. I'm not sure.
I don't know either. We're going to have to. I'll plan to check it out next. I'll run some tests next time.
Yeah. Or just stare at it because that's what, you know, just some people
look,
do.
Look
yeah.
directly. Just look uh-huh. directly at it.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Well, aside from an eclipse, what else we got coming up, dude? What's going on?
Well, you know, we keep saying that it's fall. And while it really hasn't been fall, I think September 1st should officially mark the start of the Halloween season.
Mm-hmm.
I've been seeing it online. That's got to be true. So we're just going to go with that. So based on that, it is time. If you are not made your reservations yet, it is time. Tickets are on sale in Decatur and Springfield and Alton, where we have walking tours, bus tours, pub crawls, dinner tours, dinner events, the American Oddities Museum, the Houdini Seance on Halloween, and a whole lot more. Actually, I'm down to like the last. I had to add some pub crawls. We're literally the last ones. And like all of my dinner tours in October, September, and I maybe even October are sold out already.
Nice.
So, I mean, there's stuff left, but man, you got to get on it. So between all the tours and the ghost hunts, if you can't find something spooky to do this fall, then you just ain't trying. You know, I use that from that Prohibition quote. You know, if you can't find booze during Prohibition, you just ain't trying.
That's
well, I'm gonna say the same thing about something spooky that we've got to offer this fall. So you could check out everything that we offer, or at least to get to everywhere you need to go, at AmericanHauntings.net. There's too many separate websites there for me to list them all. So just go there. That'll get you everywhere you need to go. So
awesome. Well, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our new subscribers on Patreon. So thank you very much for supporting the show to Rebecca, Gloria, Renee, Philip, Jody, Michelle, Tammy, Whitney, Dylan, Seth, DeLovely, A, just the letter A, Tara, Joelle, Jacques, Danny, and Jody. So thank you very much for supporting the show.
Yeah, it's you might have wondered why we've seen the uptick. Well, you know, other people may or may not know, but we've got 5 seasons of our alternative podcast for people to binge on Patreon right now. And we're getting ready to kick off the new season this month about the Starred Rock murders. And so I did put something up about that, and that has apparently encourage some people to get signed up. So that's good. I'm getting ready to kick that off here in just another probably 2 weeks, and we'll have it out this month, the first episode, and then we'll be rolling from there. So I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun to start on another season. And honestly, I've had a few people contact me to tell me that they're really glad that we're starting on a new season that has nothing to do with child murders or peanut butter or torture or anything after our last episodes, because our last season was pretty rough. So anyway, we do offer the show for you every other week. It fits into the regular run with this show. So new episode every week, no waiting. And like I said, you can binge all those past seasons, including our Ed Gein season, which, you know, I'm now seeing a lot of Ed Gein because that show's getting ready to start, I think, in early October.
Oh, yes.
The new American Monster season from Ryan Murphy on FX is getting ready to start. And it is Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy is Ed Gein. I did notice, though, looking at the cast list, that they're casting some people as Alfred Hitchcock and some other people. So it looks like they're going to go back and forth with Psycho, which is, you know, also fair based on, you know, Ed Gein. We went with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So our episodes actually go back and forth with the making of Texas Chainsaw and the real life story of Ed Gein. So if you're interested in checking out something alternate that isn't with a guy from Sons of Anarchy, who I'm still having a tough time seeing him as Ed Gein.
I'm
but
excited.
The pictures, they don't look too bad. So if you want to see something different and something that, you know, we're not trying to put on TV, so it's probably going to be a little more gruesome than that show, check it out on our Patreon. And you could do that at patreon.com/AmericanHauntings. And for $5 a month, $5, you can have all of these podcasts.
You get it all.
New stuff all the time. That's right. So
awesome. Well, I want to give a quick shout out to one of our listeners who left a review. So thank you very much to Jay Tick. This one is titled, "Only These Guys Can Make the Scary and Horrible Easily Digestible." A search for Hurricane Katrina podcast brought me to your New Orleans season. Loved it. I binged the entire season and then jumped to the current season and binged that too. An American Crime reminded me why I left the social work field and now prefer to make sure my little corner of the world is a happy place. You both have an authentic and genuine kinship that makes the postmortem portion of each episode very engaging. I don't like most podcast formats or hosts, so I'm glad to have found American Hauntings. One question I'd love to hear the host answer is, what has been your favorite season thus far? That's a question for us.
Well, I like the New Orleans season. I like the vanishings, the disappearances, but I think probably for me, I think my favorite was the murder houses that we did. Was that last year?
Oh gosh. Was
that last year? I can't remember now. Gosh, it's all started.
There's too many.
There's too many. I did like that murder house season though, because I got to do some stuff that I wouldn't normally probably have done. Otherwise, you know, it was a way to fit something into the podcast. I've enjoyed this one a lot because I like movies so much, but I think so far that's been my favorite. So
yeah, I think New Orleans was probably my favorite, but I also just really liked Haunted Alton. We didn't know what we were doing, but I was excited. That's why I wanted to do it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, sure.
So that was really fun. But I think, probably Haunted New Orleans, or I mean Haunted Hollywood. They've all been.
Oh gosh, yeah, I forgot about that. Was a good one too.
Yeah, but that.
Oh
that was
well, the, I don't know. It was fun. That so was. It's all. They've all been pretty fun.
They've
so,
all been. They've all had their emotional ups and downs.
That is true. Yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah. So thank you very much for leaving that review.
So hey, and since you left a review. If you would like us to send you something cool in the mail, this is your chance to be bribed, even though you've already made, you know, the post. Just text me your address on the haunt line at 217-791-7859, and I will drop something in the mail to you. I have something going out already this week from our last episode when we read our review. So anyway, if you're interested, be sure to do that, and I'll get you something out. So.
Awesome. Were you ready to dive in?
I am ready, if you're ready.
Yes. So I remember when this movie, Veronica, came out, and they were really pushing it as scariest movie, scariest movie, scariest movie.
Yeah. And I still see it pop up. I mean, I constantly see it popping up about how, I just read something that said that 1 out of every 100 people that start the movie don't finish it. And I thought that's probably not how I advertise, but they're going with the idea that it's too scary to finish. I've never watched a movie that I found too scary to finish, too dumb to finish, too awful to finish, too horrible to get through the first 10 minutes. Oh, sure. I've turned a lot of those off, but I think that maybe that's looking at the bright side. Now, I really like this movie. Don't get me wrong, but I would not use that advertising to promote this film, because to me, that just means that a lot of Americans who turned it on went, oh, I don't want to read it, and turned it off because it's subtitled. So
yes,
that, I mean, you know, because 60% of our society is illiterate, that is a true percentage. So that's, again, not something I'd want to advertise if I was trying to tout the United States, but, you know, that's a actual fact rather than this 1 in 100 thing. So let's not go with that, but it is still advertised as being really scary. And while I wouldn't say it's the scariest movie I've ever seen by any means, I do like it a lot. And it isn't for the faint of heart. There's some good stuff in this. There are some things that's what I like sometimes about foreign films is, you know, you'll see things that we don't do here for whatever reason or haven't done yet. And I think that makes a huge difference sometimes. And, you know, how many like South American films have I forced you to watch?
Yes,
you know, and you're like, oh my god, I'm so glad I watched that. Atorado, Terrified, one of my favorite films
of
all
time.
They keep saying they're gonna, we're gonna do an American remake. You'll ruin it. I'm telling you, you're gonna ruin it.
Not necessary,
because that movie is so weird. It needs to be a foreign film, and you need to find it. It needs to be a niche that you find. The Coffee Table. A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You remember that? That is so intense. You could not make that film in this country. You could not. It is unmakeable in the United States. But like the guys who did, Where Evil Lurks or Lies, that came out a couple of years ago. Same guys that had done other stuff that I really liked. And these are not movies that you can do, I don't think, in this country and make them work. I mean, all I got to say is Dog Face. That's all I have to say about that movie. And no one would do that here. Like The Coffee Table wouldn't be done. So I think there are some things about Veronica that really work because it's a Spanish film.
I wouldn't want to see a remake here. You know, and while it's not exactly, obviously, the true story is pretty wild, too, in this case. And so I know that we normally, this is American Hauntings. So we normally have tried to do films that are based on American stories, but we've done a couple that weren't. We did the Philip thing in Canada, you know. So we've done some things that have been UK films and stuff. I think this is probably the furthest away from just straight American film that we've done. But I think it's worth it. I really think this one's worth it.
I agree. No, I think that's all very well said. And something about the, I guess, family dynamic and family drama that works really well with it.
Yeah, yeah, I think so, too. And again, while it is very Europe centric, you know, very Spain centric as far as even the family drama, it's not that far off from what would happen here when you've got the single mother, you know, father that died, single mother, and you've got this young girl who's now the mother. I mean, it's like watching an episode of Shameless or something.
Yeah,
you've got the older sister who's taking care of the entire family, which is essentially what's happening here. She just, you know, all this stuff was done, I don't know, as an escape, you know, it was a way to escape. And I also just to add one other thing about this too, is that, you know, Pedro Plaza being the director and writer of this, you know, who's known for the Wreck films, which I absolutely love. I love them all in different ways. The first one though is terrifying. And when they tried to remake that as Quarantine,
yep,
it wasn't nearly as scary or nearly as good. And so that was a film that really didn't need to be remade because it worked so well because it was a Spanish film. But if you haven't seen that, if you're listening to this and you have not seen the original Wreck, even Wreck 2, which takes place like minutes after the first one ends, I highly recommend them. If you track them down, maybe you've seen Quarantine. It stars
Deb,
Dexter's sister. Yeah, Deb from, and who's also in The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which we also covered. German story. There was one we did outside the country, but American film. But it's not bad, but the original Wreck is just so good. And if you're wondering why I keep saying Wreck, it's not Wreck like car wreck. It's REC. It's the recording button that you push on your video camera, or you would have pushed on your camera when this film was made in the early 2000s. Wreck, REC. Definitely check that out if you haven't seen it. And check out Veronica too if you haven't seen it. So
yeah, absolutely. And it's something I think is interesting. You talked about, you know, things that they wouldn't do here making a film versus other places, but I've also just noticed even maybe it's just like cultural ghost differences or haunting differences. And because you don't hear too much about a ghost hissing at a family as much, you know, or like the just very particular kind of language and things that what might be way more scary to other people, you know, compared to, you know, a different country and things. And so just seeing what other cultures find more terrifying that they're going to put in a movie, things I'm not thinking
that's
of, which
good,
is great.
That's a good point. Yeah, a really good point. And even when it comes to when it comes to the true story, I told Cody, I said I had somewhat of a tough time with some of this because I had to, some of this stuff was translating newspapers into English and making it make sense, which is not always easy, but you know, I wanted to get what the cops were really saying. Mm-hmm. Now, see, there's something that would never, there's a cultural difference right there. The fact that these cops would go on record and say, we experienced paranormal events. It is not something that you're going to find happening here.
Right.
Even back in the 90s, that wasn't a normal thing, you know, in this country. And so that in itself, the cultural differences there were really interesting to me too,
right,
as far as how it all kind of came together with the true story and, you know, what was seen as frightening to them, like you said, is really interesting to see how things change. But that's a cultural thing that I've noticed a lot in watching different kinds of movies over the years, and how much scarier ghosts seem to be in a lot of foreign films compared to here or even in Britain. You know, Britain has seems to have the same British ghosts seem to be a lot like our ghosts. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, sure, they get mad, they get angry, and then you've got something scary. But most of the time, they just seem to kind of haunt people. Where you get these Spanish films and they just really seem angry. And then
I think it's the religious aspect, maybe.
I don't know, so man, ingrained. Because you get like Japanese and Korean, especially Japanese films, though. None of those ghosts are friendly at all.
Right.
I mean, look at The Grudge or The Ring or any of that stuff. I mean, my God, that they're really angry and they want you dead.
In the daytime too.
Yeah. It's really interesting to see the differences.
What scares people.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks. And one of the things you mentioned too with the true story is something I'm sure it's happened before, but like in a movie or something, but I like the photo burning behind glass, like in a frame or something. Like that's cool. Like
that is cool. That's cool. When I saw that in the movie, I didn't know that was something he'd plucked out of the real story.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to give this away.
Right.
I didn't want to give too much of it away. Because I will say that it does not end exactly the same, you know, in the real life with the real story. He pulled like a lot of pieces out of it. The basics of the story do come out of the real thing, but there are some differences. And just like I wanted to stop the opening when those cops walk in, and we don't see what they see until the end.
Mm-hmm.
But we see the looks on their faces, and then it cuts away to 5 days before the phone call.
Yes.
And so I didn't want to give too much away because if people haven't seen it, I really hope they'll go watch it. Mm-hmm. It's right there on Netflix.
Yes.
And they did a prequel to it about the nun, the blind nun. It's pretty good. It's not based on anything other than, you know, they just kind of took that character and kind of created how she ended up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in her past that she knows these things to tell Veronica. So it's good. It is good. And it's really well done. But I definitely watch Veronica first and then watch the prequel.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the prequel, you seem to not have seen it.
It's worth watching.
It is worth watching. Yeah. I liked it. And you know how I usually feel about prequels.
Yeah. Not a fan.
No, not usually, but
yeah,
that's a case of where it works.
I'll have to check it out. It is a great opening scene, like you said. And it's one that actually, you know, it does hook you because you want to be like, well, wait, where's this coming from? What happened?
Yeah. So, and I guess what's cool about it is that it is so much like what really happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they placed the phone call and the cops came there, and that's pretty much how they found the house.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
Like, you know, as far as being a wreck. Yeah. Right. So yeah, it is that kind of stuff that the things that he really used from real life, really, really add to the movie, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the phone calls at the beginning, the 911 calls, they're so good. Just like panic,
right.
You know?
Right.
Like,
a little different because Veronica, Estefania does not make the calls that Veronica makes.
Oh, sure.
But still, it still definitely all works.
It gets your attention. Yeah, real quick.
Yeah.
The last thing I would just say is we touched on this, but the cops, you know, documenting so much of this. And so we don't do it here, I would imagine, just because the stigma or like, you know, really, sure. Officer, why is it that they did document so much of this or like felt comfortable being like, I saw crazy shit?
I don't
know.
That's a good question. I wondered about that too. I mean, this guy, I mean, the investigator here was like the head of the Spanish National Police.
He was up
there.
Yeah.
And I guess he had seen it and he knew what he'd seen and he had the authority and the clout, I guess, to just say, hey, you know, this is what I saw and this is what's happening here. And nobody is going to tell him he can't say it, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know. But I mean, all the guys came in, you know, all the guys who were with him, they all added in their parts to the report and talked about what they experienced and what they'd seen. And they refused to back down.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe, maybe Spain being, you know, as you know, we're talking about the early 90s. So it's pre-internet, pre-everything, pre-cell phones, pre-everything. And, you know, a very heavily Catholic country, maybe they felt comfortable saying that we had this experience. But it became a, you know, like I said in the story, it's become one of the most famous stories in the country as far as true. It is their Amityville Horror. You know what I mean? I mean, it's their famous story that everyone knows. And, you know, and I'm sure that over time, a lot of things have gotten mixed into it that are, you know, maybe not so true, just like this. But, and I'm sure that fact got mixed with fiction when Veronica came out as well. You know, I'm sure people saw that and thought more about Estefania's story, you know. But I don't know. It's that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Why they would have been open to it. It kind of befuddled me.
That does make sense, though. And you mentioned something, I don't want to misquote, and I don't know if this was in tongue-in-cheek or not, but Ouija board sales dropped?
That's the story. I mean, that's what they say.
Did they spike, you know, with The Exorcist, or did they drop?
I would think they probably dropped when The Exorcist came out, because it really painted it in a way that's not something that you want to do. And it did after this too. You know, in the movie, I mean, she just goes out to like the newsstand and buys it's almost like a cardboard comes in a magazine kind of thing.
It was kind of weird.
And I couldn't find any, you know, hard details on what kind of Ouija board that Estefania took to school with her friends. But considering that the nun snapped it in half, I'm going to say it probably was not super high quality, you know, you know what I mean? But, you know, I mean, I'm going to say that with religious countries like Spain, the occult kind of goes hand in hand with that kind of thing. I mean, you see a rise in interest, you know, like even back in the 80s during the satanic panic, you know, every band started putting, you know, pentagrams and stuff on the cover of every album, even though they knew it was going to draw fire. It was great advertising,
of course,
publicity. So of course you know, when you know that there's that so many people opposed to whatever it is you're doing, you know, you're going to get a lot of attention if you, you know, it kind of poke the bear, so to speak.
Absolutely. You know, well, I don't have any other questions. Is there anything else you wanted to go over with this?
No, I think it's good.
Yeah, it's good.
My excitement over it was, I just kept pushing, please watch this. Please watch this. Please, why would you watch it? Please watch it. You know,
and you
so
should.
Hopefully
yeah.
people will, and let us know what they think.
That's great.
Don't text me and tell me I don't want to read a movie.
I don't like
subtitles. You know, if you don't, that's okay. But keep it to yourself, because I'll just think less of you.
Yeah. So. Yes. And there's nothing we can do about it. And
there's I cannot help you.
There was not an English dub, even on Netflix. And you don't want to do it.
Don't watch it that way, because it's horrible when you do.
Right. Hey, if you have a question or comment about the world of the macabre, you can email me at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com. I don't have any ghostwriters, but I'm sure you got some haunt line stuff.
Eh? I do. And if you do have questions or comments you'd like to make, you can text us on the haunt line at 217-791-7859. And it may just get read on the show. So I'm going to start with our buddy, Eddie. He is a good texter as far as keeping us in touch with what's going on. But he says, hey there, Troy and Cody, hope things are going well. First off, want to say I'm loving the American Dread podcast that Adam does, so keep that coming. He said, secondly, the American Crime episode was heartbreaking, as we already know. You did an amazing job at telling Sylvia's story. She deserves to be remembered. And he adds a PS, karma collected Aunt Gertrude. So her dying from, you know, cancer, she probably had it coming. So, all right. Well, this one comes to us from Cheryl in the 417. I don't know. We probably did. I don't remember talking about Brad Pitt. Did we talk about Brad Pitt, Lisa?
I mean,
recently?
I do every day, but I don't know if we did.
Anyway, she's not a fan. But he's from her area, from her area. Never understood the fascination with him. Anyway, I enjoy listening, trying to catch up. Have a difficult time listening about the serial killers, but do that's our Patreon. But do enjoy the regular seasons. Thank you, and hope to see you soon, Cheryl. There will be no serial killer and no. Well, I mean, there's murder and some other things in the next Patreon season, but it won't be nearly as bad as the Albert Fish episode that we just did. So,
right. But it is all about Brad Pitt. We forgot to tell you.
Oh, yeah. It's actually, yes, it is. It's all about Brad Pitt. So I am really sorry about that. I'm just joking. All right. So this one comes to us from the 636. This one says, I don't remember if you covered if the lipstick killer was also associated with Elizabeth Short. Is that a possibility? They heard it on another podcast, which I'm not going to name. It is absolutely not a possibility. It has nothing to do with it. That is not the same killer. Now, we did cover the lipstick killer because we covered the haunted house with Susan Denyon. Remember, she was the little girl that was chopped up into pieces and scattered throughout the neighborhood.
Yeah, I know.
But the lipstick killer was I've never believed it's the same killer, mm-hmm. but I also don't believe it's the same person that killed Beth Short. So I don't think it had anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I think I've become more and more convinced, which I need to pursue this. But I've become more and more convinced the Black Dahlia murders have more to do with those werewolf murders in L.A. at the time. Not necessarily that it was a serial killer, but that big rise in murders from all those guys coming back from World War II. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but no, I don't think it has anything to do with Susan. You know, it's like when people take every single axe murder that's happened in the country and try to tie all of them together into Villisca. It's not. There are a handful of them that do have the same. We've already talked about this. We got a whole season on Villisca. But I don't believe that it's one person that does them all. But if you just are trying to kind of, you know, get people's attention with a theory, then that's the kind of thing that you do. But yeah, I don't think the lipstick killer and the Black Dahlia have any connection.
I can see too, just because of the imagery for Black Dahlia a lot of times,
with sure.
makeup, her lips, sure. things like that. I could see even asking that question. So I get it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it wasn't. I wasn't. It wasn't me.
Oh, I know.
I wasn't telling them it was a bad thing. It's just they heard it somewhere else. And that's just, you know, it's like the guy that, said his dad. I mean, well, I don't want to go through all that again. I don't want to go through the whole thing with the doctor with George Hodel, and you know, a guy would just. It was a great way to get attention, but mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many flaws with the theory from start to finish,
right?
You know, but I know people love to bring that stuff up.
Well,
that's probably what the podcast.
We're here to clear up myths and tell the truth and hope
we also get
a good story out of that.
Well, sure, yeah, we try to. So, all right. Well, this one comes to us from the 818. Now, the problem that the only problem I see here with this text is no. I don't know where the 818 is, and they're not telling me who they are. So when they say, hey, it's been a while catching up on episodes now that I'm back to work after my paternity leave, I feel like we should know who this is, but I don't know who it is. So I was listening to the Poltergeist episode. You guys mentioned science based on research that could be conducted, but isn't. And then it mentions he and a friend are paranormal researchers and document research and data and believe that they sent us an almanac. Now, I don't remember seeing this, so I'm not sure where it went, but it wanted to know my opinion about it. But honestly, I'm not sure I saw it. Text me back and let me know where you sent it. I'm sorry, man. And I'm sorry that I don't recognize your number. I try to remember to put people's names in if they're a frequent flyer, and I must have just missed this one.
It's L.A.
Okay. All right. Well, it's going to be somebody. As soon as I see it, I'm going to go, oh, I know who that is, but I don't know it from the number. I was watching a movie where Sam and I were watching a movie, and this guy, they handed somebody a phone and said, here, you know, text or call somebody and a random phone. And I said to her, I couldn't text you. if I didn't have my phone.
Not anymore.
And she said, no, I couldn't text you either. So I'm terrible, but remember that stuff. But anyway, but ads, you know, thanks for keeping the drives entertaining. So I know we know who this is.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know who it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Hit us back. Let us know.
Anyway. All right. So this one comes to us from the 423. And it says, hey, you guys talked about Houdini movies. I remember Houdini TV movie. I think came out in 1998, I think with Jonathan, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, Satch. It's just a guy from That Thing You Do, the kind of dickhead lead singer. Oh, that does not narrow it down. That's every lead singer. Mm-hmm. But it's the guy that, you know, was dating Liv Tyler, and then she ends up with the guy who I think looks just like Tom Hanks, even though he's not related to him.
None of this is helping me.
That Thing You Do. You've seen the movie though, right?
No, I've heard of it.
Oh my God. Oh, well, you know what? You need to watch it. This is not a horror film by any means.
I know.
This is a film that if you're in a bad mood or you're just feeling down or you just need a pick me up, that's this movie.
Oh,
you got to watch That Thing You Do. It's so good. I smile all the way through it. But anyway, so I do remember that movie came out. I don't remember anything about it. I probably watched it, but I don't know, long time ago. And if it's not streaming somewhere, I probably never watched it again. I'm still waiting for a good one. I haven't found one yet. But anyway, you also said something about movies you'd like to see made. I would be interested in seeing a movie based around Ronald DeFeo killing his family without the paranormal element. Mm-hmm. I would say that that's not a bad idea. You know, just to see that story. I don't know. I think they have tried to do that, but every time they've done it, they've always added in, you know, it leading up to the haunting. In fact, I think that's one of the Amityville sequels, is that's what it's about. But then, of course, it still becomes some sort of paranormal thing. Anyway, I would also be into a good movie based on something that happened in my hometown called the Battle of Athens, or Athens. I'm going to say Athens, Tennessee. There was one movie based on that, but I think it was made in the late 80s or early 90s and set in Texas instead of Tennessee, like it should have been. So I don't know about that. But if you have the name of that movie, definitely let us know or something. Although if it's that bad, maybe we don't want to watch it. You know, that could be an issue there. So, but yeah, I am not really familiar with that, but I will check that out and see what that story's about. So, but yeah, anyway, thanks. So anyway, guys, that's it for this week. So if you have any questions, comments, anything else you'd like to send us, you could text us on the hotline at 217-791-7859. And yeah, we'd love to be featured on the show. Thanks. Thanks again for checking out the story and the postmortem for this week's episode. We hope you love the show. And if you do, we hope you'll share it with your friends, family, strangers, even people that you meet on the street. In fact, when you meet people, grab them, tie them up. We recommend handcuffs and make them listen. In fact, take their phone from them, go to their iTunes, subscribe them to our show, and then force them to leave a 5-star review. Okay, maybe we shouldn't say that.
I'm on the fence.
Maybe a little violent. Okay. Anyway, how about you just leave us a review? How's that?
Safe.
You know, and make sure that you're subscribed to the show so you get an automatic download, and that way you never miss an episode. And hey, listen, if you for some reason think, oh, I haven't heard from American Hauntings in a while, check your damn phone, because sometimes it just decides to pause your automatic download for absolutely no reason whatsoever. I find that all the time on mine. Anyway, don't forget that as an American Hauntings listener, you can use the discount code podcast for 10% off any books, tours, or events you purchase from our online store. Because remember that American Hauntings is more than just this podcast. It's also books, tours, ghost hunts, events, the Haunted America Conference, and the American Oddities Museum in Alton, Illinois. You can find everything about us on the website at AmericanHauntings.net.
Beautiful. Well, this episode of the American Hauntings podcast was written and narrated by Troy Taylor. It was produced and edited by me, Cody Beck. To find out more about the show, check out the show notes or go to our website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com. If you want to find out more about the podcast, you can reach us via email, by text on the hotline, or on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks.
See, for, did you notice I took that off there?
I know.
And all the other places I kept telling you I was going to, I finally remembered. So well, anyway, thanks, sorry, go ahead.
Thanks for remembering. Thanks again for listening. We couldn't, definitely wouldn't do it without you. So until next time, goodbye.
So long.
See you later.
See you later.
All right.
All right. Well, we made it through the end.
We right at somehow. The fucking finish line.
I know it. All the way.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou. forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.